Welcome to News Over Brews, the only podcast that breaks down the best of this week's pop culture over a nice cold beer. Sponsored by PopBreak.com. I am your host and moderator, Al Manarino. On this week's episode, we review the highly anticipated new album from Steel Panther, Sony chooses a director for their planned Sinister Six film, Gearbox announces a prequel for their popular Borderlands series, and we look at the first footage from Expendables 3 in this week's Trailer Talk. With me, unfortunately, is my two partners in crime, Ryan DeMarco.
My name is Ryan. I'm unemployed and I live with my parents.
And Lucas Jones.
I got a lot of problems with you people!
Apparently this week we're doing Seinfeld quotes. So let's giddy up and go right into the beer review. Lucas, what are we drinking this week?
Well, Al, we are drinking the Game of Thrones Fire and Blood Red Ale from Omegang Brewery.
Nerdgasm.
I didn't watch the episode because I'm still like one and a half seasons behind.
You're a disappointment to everyone.
Ryan's only seen the newest episode.
Horrible, horrible, horrible human being, but we're getting off topic. Let's go right into the beer.
So the beer is... like we promised, it's a little bit of a lighter beer. It's a red ale, 6.8% alcohol by volume. Comes in a bomber bottle, which is 1.94 fluid ounces with a cork and cage top. You should serve it at around 40 degrees Fahrenheit if you can. Some fridges aren't set up for that cold, but go ahead and throw it in the freezer. No harm, no foul. I mean, don't leave it in there because then there will be harm and foul. But just don't forget about it. We poured it into a shaker pint. The beer pours a really, really dark amber. Thick white head, but disperses quickly and leaves some lacing down the side of the glass, which, for those of you who know, doesn't really mean anything. It pretty much just means that there's beer in your glass. I got some caramel in there. I got some maltiness, a little wheat almost bordering on the Saison kind of a thing. The reason why I bought this beer was it was an ale brewed with ancho chili. Now, I've had Duclaw's Coco Fuego. And that was brewed with chipotle chili. And yeah, there's a lot of chipotle in that beer. And there's not so much ancho chili in this beer. I'll let Ryan describe that because he kind of summed it up perfectly, whereas I was having trouble with it. So Ryan, how did the chili come forward in the beer?
Well, the chili, it packed a nice heat. Like, and you definitely got a huge aftertaste, like one of those atomic fireball candies. You definitely get that sucking on one of those, you get that perfect aftertaste of it.
It's like a pepper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so much a heat is what we're saying. It's not spicy.
I got a little heat.
You got a little heat.
Because
I have a high tolerance for spice, so I just got pepper flavor.
I'm a wussy, so. I do have to say though, this beer is definitely a Festivus for the rest of us, but
it's just never going to end at this point.
But for this beer, I have to say, even though I've never really watched the show except for the new one. It definitely has a conquering taste, if I can sum it up in one word, conquering.
Al, what'd you think?
Denarius would be proud. This is a very awesome beer that the Omegang Brewery Company, they've definitely marketed this very well. The bottle is beautiful. It's they're all the same, you know, they're all the same red ale that when we went to go pick this beer up, but it had all three different dragons on it, all of Daenerys' dragons. So the bottle is absolutely beautiful. The beer tastes delicious. It reminds me of another beer that I've tasted, and I can't put my finger on it. What is it, Lucas?
Is it the Victory Golden Monkey?
I don't think so.
Because I was just going to say that I'm getting Belgian triple flavors in there.
I'm absolutely tasting that.
That heavy spice, the clove, the nutmeg, the cinnamon, all characteristics of Belgian triples that I'm finding in this beer.
I don't know if it's the Golden Monkey, but you're definitely on the right track with the Belgian Triple.
The only thing I can
it's
think
absolutely
of is
Belgian Triple.
If you had the Coco Fuego, the Duclos.
I don't think I did. But, I mean, you did mention that it has the ancho chilies. It's brewed with it. You haven't really felt it or tasted it that well.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not getting spice. I'm getting, like, pepper.
I don't think you're not even immune to spice anymore because of all the spice you've had.
you said you got all the caramel, right?
Yeah, getting like toasted caramel, like dark caramel.
We're all getting
not
different,
sweet.
Different things.
It's weird. You know, and that's just the magic of Game of Thrones. It affects everyone differently.
Oh my God, shut up.
That's what happens when the house three beers in.
You know, Al, I think I figured out the beer.
What is it?
Allagash White.
Ooh, I think it is.
Because we've had that at the Arlington, at our local craft beer bar.
Supplier of craft beer, because our town is a ghost town and only has one beer.
But yeah, I think Allagash White is what we're looking for, that spiced. Because it's like a white beer, like a wheat almost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that aftertaste you're getting, that light spiced taste.
Yes.
Whereas the Belgian Triple would be like a heavier spice.
You definitely hit it on the head. It's definitely the Allagash White, because I remember when we tried that on tap and it had such a unique taste. And then when I was tasting this, I was like, wow, this seems so familiar.
Mm-hmm. I got a little bit of that too.
So that's the profile of the Game of Thrones Fire and Blood Red Ale. Very quickly, as far as the other two beers, I haven't tried Take the Castle Black. Arlington's holding on to a case of that, I found out, or a keg of that. So hopefully we'll have to stay on top of them. But I like this a lot more than I like the first ale, the blonde ale, the Iron Throne ale.
So this is an entire Game of Thrones series, what you're telling
us? Yeah, they're doing four different beers.
Four?
And they're making a lot of
how money. Many? Absolutely. How many have been released so far?
Three.
Three. So we have the Fire and Blood, and what else?
The Take the Castle Black Stout, which I heard was very good.
That was last year, right?
Yeah, and then the year before that was the Iron Throne Blonde Ale. So I'm guessing we'll have to wait till the start of the next season to get the last beer.
I can't wait to review the Klingon beer.
Oh my God, that's right, the Klingon beer.
That's going to happen. This is going to just be a nerdy beer.
We're
going
to have to
review
that, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. Getting to our first bit of pop culture news, we're going into some movie news. A few podcasts ago, we talked about Sony's plans on making an entire Amazing Spider-Man's franchise, not just the Amazing Spider-Man films, you know, 1, 2, and 3, but also to branch out and to explore his rogues gallery. There was already plans for a Venom film that was going to be, I know Josh Trank was involved in that film, and I think he still is, but they recently announced that they were going to make a Sinister Six film, which focuses on his entire rogues gallery, almost a Avengers team that wants to take down Spider-Man. No idea how that movie would take place, but they just announced who would be directing that film. It's going to be none other than Drew Goddard, who... yes, who...
I don't know who that is.
Yes, and I will explain who that is. Drew Goddard, last that you've heard of him, he directed an awesome movie that you absolutely love, Lucas, Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Yes. So he wrote and directed that film, as well as writing the movie Cloverfield, and he has wrote for a ton of Whedonverse TV series like Buffy and Buffy and Angel.
And Lost, too, right?
He's written for Alias and Lost as well.
It's quite a little list.
Yes, and the most recent thing that he's been attached to is the highly anticipated Daredevil Netflix series.
Oh, yes.
So now my question for you guys is, Ryan, since you are probably a fan of Drew Goddard's work, probably since Cloverfield, what do you think about the decision of him being tapped to direct a film about a villain team? And what would that film involve?
Well, when I heard this, I was a little puzzled because I figured he had his hands full with the Daredevil project, but I guess not. So he's
apparently they worked around it. So,
well, I'm a little confused at the moment because, you know, I really don't know how their movie's going to run. You know, is it a movie centered around six villains? Is Spider-Man in it, like, very little? Like, I don't know how the movie... There's very little information on it. But,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but wasn't one of the weaknesses of the third Spider-Man movie that there were too many villains in it?
Well, the Spider-Man sequel is going to have three villains in it as well. And one of the weaknesses with the Spider-Man... Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3 is... you know, me and Ryan were just discussing this before, that the ending was so abrupt that there was no time to kind of show off these villains. I mean, you had New Goblin, you had Venom, and you had Sandman. And Sandman had a great origin, as well as Venom. And, you know, New Goblin's origin kind of been developing since the first Spider-Man film. But they kind of just threw them all together. And apparently Mark Webb has said that, yeah, there's three villains in this film, but, you know, but don't count them out. You know,
He's very confident.
He's very confident.
He's not going to fall for the same thing Sam Raimi did. Especially casting Kirsten Dunst in the movie.
Cause, that was terrible. You know, that was a horrible idea.
Yeah, you know, because she has man hands. So, she you does. Know. But
I'm just keep going with the Seinfeld references.
So, you know, it's an intriguing move, and obviously they have something planned. I guess as we actually said before, I guess they're going with the Marvel phase. With they're gonna do, you know, Spider-Man 3 and 4 plus Venom, now Sinister 6.
Yeah, they want to try to do a different Spider-Man film each year. Now Sony obviously owns the rights to do Spider-Man films, and they're kind of banking on it because it's pretty much their most successful franchise. So they want to make take the Marvel model of having a different movie each year, but Spider-Man has such a long and famous history surrounding it, as well as a ton of villains, some heroes that were introduced. I mean, Spider-Man has dealt with the Kingpin just like Daredevil, so they have the rights to use him, Black Cat, and of course all these villains in the Sinister Six. Lucas, I'm going to shoot it to you. You're not a huge comic book fan like me and Ryan are, but you're obviously a fan of superhero movies because we drag you to all of them. Would you want to go see a Drew Goddard-directed Sinister Six film that focuses on these six villains? And for those of you who don't know who is in the Sinister Six, that includes Dr. Octopus, Electro, Sandman, Mysterio, Vulture, and Kraven the Hunter, most of which have never been featured in a live-action film before.
Mysterio could be cool.
Absolutely.
I remember Mysterio from the Spider-Man video game for N64. Mm-hmm. That was pretty interesting. But, I mean, I think using the Marvel version of putting out movies, the Marvel strategy, is not good for them necessarily, because Marvel, you put out like, all right, so you've got all the different characters. You got Thor, Iron Man, Captain America. We're not doing the Hulk anymore. We already gave up trying to reboot the Hulk a million times, so we're just.
So they don't have to reboot him. I think apparently this was another rumor. We're getting off topic, but the film is gonna have a Avengers Age of Ultron, the sequel to Avengers, is going to focus heavily on Hawkeye and Hulk, which had, you know, didn't have that much in the first Avengers film.
Right.
But that's getting off topic. Go back to Drew Goddard directed Sinister Six film.
I mean, the Drew Goddard directed Sinister Six film is probably going to be really good because it'll give us an eye into the Spider-Man universe that we haven't really had. Most Spider-Man films have focused on the recognizable characters. Dr. Octopus, Green Goblin.
Mm-hmm.
And Venom in the third movie. But I feel like if they oversaturate with Spider-Man, it's too much of the same thing. Like, the Avengers movies and all those different side movies have different feel, a different theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the Thor movies more than I like the Iron Man movies. Because they have a different feel to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They focus on different things. So I feel like they run the risk of oversaturating with Spider-Man if they don't change it up and introduce some of the lesser known villains. Either way, it's going to be ridiculously successful, as we've seen.
Yes.
The only thing they would have to worry about is the movies being actually bad. If the movies are good, no one's going to worry about the oversaturation. But if the movies start to decline in quality, then it's going to compound the problem.
And I think that all depends on the success of Spider-Man 2, which opens May 2nd. Getting to something that we rarely talk about, only sometimes, video game news. One of our favorite subjects to ever talk about, Gearbox's incredibly addicting Borderlands franchise. They just announced, well, apparently it's a rumor, so it isn't officially announced yet, but very, very trustful sources have said that there might be a sequel.
Is that source Collider?
It's not Collider. It's actually IGN, Internet Gaming News.
Collider.
apparently, there might be a little bit of a prequel sequel to our favorite franchise, Borderlands. It's supposedly take place between Borderlands 1 and 2, and it's not going to be on the next-gen consoles, Xbox One and PlayStation. It's actually going to be on the last-gen consoles, which would be Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, and, of course, PC. And it's going to be focused on the character from Borderlands 2, Handsome Jack, that we all love. It's going to be him when he was much younger, and, you know, trying to make a name for himself. And you play as one of four of his enforcers. One of them really excited about. His name's Fragtrap, who is actually a combat-ready version of everyone's favorite character, Claptrap. So I'm incredibly excited for any more Borderlands, an excuse to play the game. Now, Ryan, you have barely played the game as much as we want you to.
we need a Gunzerker.
We really do need a Gunzerker. But, you know, what do you think about another adventure into Pandora?
Well, to start off, the only thing that's really bothering me right now is these pretzels are making me thirsty.
Jesus Christ.
In all seriousness.
We're going to get you out of this podcast in a minute.
I love the first Borderlands. The second one, I didn't play as much as I wanted to. I will agree with you that any more Borderlands is cool. However, I think this new edition, if it's a reality, is unnecessary. I don't think I need to really go off on that, but I think it's unnecessary. If they really want to do more adventures with something, maybe they'll add another, or they're done with the DLCs, right?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Well, then just do Borderlands 3. I don't know. For some reason, it's just kind of, I think after the first two, they need to kind of like do the Bioshock thing, just kind of go off on a whole new, different path. I mean, too much of the same thing is a bad thing, I think. So, that's my opinion.
Well, I think they're trying to avoid that by not doing the same thing, by giving you the perspective of the other side.
Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Yeah, they're giving you the...
Yeah, if you actually played the second one, you'd understand the little spiel that I said
really?
Beforehand.
Because I've been too busy importing, exporting.
What do you import?
Latex.
Matches.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to give you the other side of the coin, and I think it's nice, it's refreshing. I like that they're not putting it on next-gen consoles, because frankly, no one owns next-gen consoles at this point. They're too expensive, and there's no games.
Barely.
Still trying to make it backwards compatible, too.
Yeah. The good news is that PC is always compatible. So for PC users, you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Thank God, man.
All right. Well, Lucas, my question for you is, obviously, you're a fan of both Borderlands 1 and 2. Do you think it's necessary for a prequel, you know, a game to take place in between 1 and 2 to, you know, give more backstory on Handsome Jack? Or would you prefer Gearbox to try something completely different and focus their attention on a whole new franchise?
I think a good strategy, if I were Gearbox, I would release this game. Release it for $40, not $60.
Okay.
Which makes it more of an expansion than anything else. $30, $40.
Make it $30.
No one releases a game for $30.
Yeah,
I'm
I mean, I would take $40. I think that, because considering it's probably going to be open world, I would take $40. But I would release this game, and I would say, you know, this kind of fills in the gap between 1 and 2. You guys can play this. We're going to go make another game, and then we're coming back.
Yeah,
to make Borderlands 3.
But I would honestly, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to just finish off by saying that I like Ryan's idea of moving on to something else, but they need a little bit of something, because people want more.
Mm-hmm.
But Borderlands, Gearbox might not be ready to jump into making their opus of Borderlands 3. So they give us a little taste, move on to something else, give themselves a bit of a creative break, and then come back.
Honestly, that's kind of what I think personally is what Valve's doing with our favorite franchise, Left 4 Dead. I mean, we had Left 4 Dead 1, and then the next year, Valve surprised us completely by not making an expansion or anything. They went right onto a sequel, which is completely unlike Valve. So we're still waiting for Left 4 Dead 3.
Well, if I could say something about Left 4 Dead, they made Left 4 Dead free on Steam about 10 months before Left 4 Dead 2 came out. Left 4 Dead 2 is now free on Steam and has been for a month.
Ooh. I know. I'm saying we're due for Left 4 Dead 3, but what I'm saying is they took a huge break in between 2 and 3. So maybe once this prequel comes out for Borderlands 1 and 2, Gearbox will either focus their attention on something totally different or maybe go right into a next-gen Borderlands 3. But only time will tell, and hopefully this rumor isn't just a rumor and we can get an actual release date for a new Borderlands game. This week in music is our highly anticipated review for the newest album from Steel Panther, All You Can Eat. This week, Lucas went to go visit our friend Nectar up at Rutgers University, and they did the review up there. Here it is.
Thanks, Al. And joining me to do this very special Steel Panther album review is the one, the only, Nectar Nectar!
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Doing all right. So, today is the day of days that we've been waiting for. Today, of course, being Tuesday, April 1st, the date that this was recorded. Today, a number of albums came out. The Ronnie James Dio tribute album came out. The Austrian Death Machine, Triple Brutal, is out. But most importantly, the third Steel Panther album is out, if you don't count their Hole Patrol EP.
which came out several years before this one. So the new album is called All You Can Eat. It has 12 songs, and we are going to go ahead and give you our best, not so best, and still better than every other band out there selections off the new album. So, Nectar, ladies first, what did you like about the album in general?
In general, I really like the way they experimented, I think, with like new arrangements. I liked all the lyrics of the new songs. I thought they went way more vulgar, which I enjoyed. I think they really like pushed the envelope on this album, and I just really enjoyed. I'm very excited to see them live in May, so makes me excited for it.
Yeah, actually, I kind of thought they went sneaky vulgar. Like on the last album, there was a lot of like very explicit cursing in every single song, but a lot of songs on this album, it kind of toned back like the single word expletives in favor of more subtle approach. A song like Bukkake Tears, where instead of outwardly stating what the song is about, you know, it really turns into a subtle love ballad where a man trying to please his wife, trying to give her the thing that she needs to hold the marriage together.
It's like community property, basically.
Exactly. So I really like this album, too. It starts off with a bang. Pussy Whipped is the first song on the album. It starts off with a nice Spanish classical guitar intro, and just that first riff kicks so much ass. You can definitely tell that's going to be the first song they play at the show.
I really hope so. If they don't start with something from a previous album, I definitely hope it's the first one, because I listened to it today, and it got me so excited for the rest of the album. It's definitely one of my favorite songs.
So more in general stuff, the first half of the album is pretty kicking. The second half of the album, they kind of go off and they do a couple of different things, a couple of slow songs, experimenting with a couple of different sounds. The one thing that I found in this album is less of a covering other bands vibe. In their previous albums, you can tell, oh, they went for, they went for Bon Jovi on this one. Oh, this song is, you know, a mockery of, you know, like Girl from Oklahoma is clearly more than words. And they really have their own sound on this album, and their own sort of feel is starting to come out a little bit more.
No, I definitely agree with you. I definitely preferred the first half just because they were more upbeat, and even though I love Girl from Oklahoma because it is a little bit slower, and I'm usually partial to slower songs, but just for their style, I think songs like Pussy Whips, Party Like Tomorrow's the End of the World, Bukkake Tears, Gang Bang at the Old Folks Home, they were just definitely way more fun to listen to, in my opinion.
I was actually a sucker for Glory Hole. Because I recently have gotten into some weird metal. I got into swing metal, Diablo String Orchestra, and so Glory Hole has that like swing rhythm. And you can tell that Satchel's influence is Eddie Van Halen. And Van Halen, because Van Halen did a lot of swing. That 1-2-1-2 rhythm. And that's present on 3 or 4 songs on this album. So Nectar, give me your 3 favorite songs and why you like them.
I would have to say Pussy Whipped, Bukkake Tears, and Gang Bang at the Old Folks Home. I just think that they were hilarious to listen to. I think my favorite thing about Steel Panther is that you can like laugh to all of their songs, but they're also just really impressive with how they play them. I mean, Satchel is just amazing. So is like Lexi and Russ Parrish. Wait, no, I already said him. That's Satchel. But but I just think they're all really amazing musicians, and those are definitely my 3 favorites. They're just so much fun to listen to.
I would probably, I mean, excluding Pussy Whipped, because that song is amazing, and excluding the 2 singles that were released, Party Like Tomorrow's the End of the World and The Burden of Being Wonderful, which are both great songs. As a Def Leppard fan, Burden of Being Wonderful was awesome. But I'd have to go with Glory Hole, because it's a rocking song. It's got a really cool crowd chant that could go along with it. It's got just a kicking rhythm. The solo's great. I really got a kick out of 10 Strikes, You're Out. I don't know if you were able to hear the lyrics on your 1 or 2 listens through, but 10 Strikes, You're Out is the story of a man who gives his girlfriend 10 strikes before he kicks her out of the house. And it's such a funny trip through like some kind of weird mind of, I can only assume that Michael Starr was totally responsible for that song.
I agree.
And my last one is I think it's a tie. It's a tie between BVS, which is short for Big Vagina Syndrome, and If I Was the King. If I Was the King has a really cool instrumental section, but I gotta be honest, Big Vagina Syndrome is hilarious. It tells the story of a man who can't seem to understand why he can't satisfy his girlfriend with his massive, massive 4-inch penis. And he can assume that it's only due to a disease that that is afflicting every woman that he's ever slept with, called Big Vagina Syndrome. So he's on a quest to cure it. And it's just the way that they present the lyrics is, you know, is fantastic. And it's an awesome time traveling experience to go back to a better time, a simpler time, when a band could wear tight pants and ripped shirts and play guitar solos until the break of dawn and sing about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and everyone just kind of laughed and loved. And
that's really beautiful.
Thank you. And as big of a fan as I am of the 80s, and Nectar, I know you are too, Al is not. Al, who's sitting to my right, is, unfortunately, I haven't converted him. He has not seen the light yet. But we're working on it. Al, as someone who's not completely obsessed with the 1980s, as myself and Nectar are, what were your impressions of the album?
Thank you, Lucas, for that excellent introduction. I absolutely loved this album, and you just kind of introduced me to Steel Panther, you know, maybe a year ago. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's both a parody on this lost generation known as the 1980s, but also, you know, they kind of make strides forward too. They make it not even mainstream, but they make it so everyone kind of wants to hear, because what are they going to say next? And not only that, like, wow, they're actually really, really good musicians too. So, I mean, I absolutely enjoyed the album. Some of my favorites, you guys already mentioned, you know, Bukkake Tears is just, come on. The title alone, I was laughing. Yeah, pun intended. And, you know, the first single that we even heard from it was Party Like It's the End of the World. I really enjoyed that one as well. The whole album from start to finish was just excellent. And, yes, I may not be a fan of the 1980s, but I'm absolutely a fan of Steel Panther.
And if this album isn't enough Steel Panther for you, you can get one more track that Satchel's on. So we mentioned the Ronnie James Dio tribute album. Satchel is actually on that album. Him and Corey Taylor from Slipknot do a cover of Rainbow in the Dark, which is one of my favorite Ronnie James Dio songs. And Satchel, obviously I'm not biased at all, kills it. He's amazing. Everything he touches turns to liquid gold. So that's our review of the Steel Panther album. Unfortunately, we don't have time to review the Ronnie James Dio album or the new Austrian Death Machine album, so you're just going to have to go out and listen to it and let April 1st, 2004 go down as a milestone day in the history of heavy metal.
Moving into our last bit of pop culture-related news, we're going to go talk about the first official trailer for Expendables 3, and this week's trailer talk. Now, Ryan, give us a brief synopsis of this third installment of our favorite action franchise starring overaged, outdated action stars.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's an amazing franchise, Oscar-worthy, and will be remembered for the rest of time. It's
False.
About... if you've seen the first two, which you should have, it's about Sylvester Stallone and his band of misfits, not really. It's his band of, I guess, mercenaries in a way. Kind of his little ragtag team that usually takes down baddies in the first two. They're up against Mel Gibson in this one as Conrad Stonebrooks, who apparently, I think the way it is, he's founded the Expendables. I guess he at one time was with Stallone, and now they parted ways, and now he's back. With Mel Gibson, in addition, would be Wesley Snipes, Ronda Rousey, Kevin Lutz.
Kelsey Grammer.
Kelsey Grammer, of course.
Ortiz, is he on this team?
Oh, Victor Ortiz, yes, mm-hmm. The boxer. And Harrison Ford.
Are these all member of his Expendables, or just...
I hope not.
All right, so we really have little knowledge of who's on whose side.
All
but...
we know is Gibson's the bad guy.
Yes.
Oh, and in the trailer, if you've seen it, at the very end, it appears Wesley Snipes is with Stallone, which is a little bit of a disappointment on my part, because I kind of wanted... I like Wesley Snipes as a bad guy.
What did you think of the footage?
The footage was... It couldn't tease me anymore if they wanted. I hate when they do a little... Like, I love it and I hate it at the same time. It's just, oh, hey, look what we have here. See you in August. Comes out in August. I wanted more. And I liked what I saw, though. Except for the tagline was One Last Ride, which I don't like. Because I want Expendables to go on forever until one of them literally drops dead on screen. But...
Until Sylvester Stallone's muscles explode from all the steroid that he's taken.
Hey, that's all natural.
Yeah, of course okay. All right, moving on to Lucas, who will give us an actual description of the trailer.
I thought mine was fairly accurate.
Luke, what did you think of the first footage from this film?
Yeah, like Ryan said, it's just, it teases you. That's all it's supposed to do. It gives you just enough to want more. And then it pulls back and it says, nope. Not yet. You have to wait until August.
It's one of those movies that just when you see the trailers for it, you just can't help but smile. Just when it shows you all these major icons.
Well, and plus, think of it this way. Like, some movies we talk about, you know, on here, and it's like, oh, you know, I didn't really like the screenplay, or I didn't like the writing, or is the balance between villains of Spider-Man going to be enough? Expendables, nobody cares.
No one cares.
We know there's not going to be a plot.
No plot needed.
The plot is good. Like I said for Expendables 2, the plot could be Sylvester Stallone and his team are dropped on an island. There are a million bad guys in between him and the villain. Go. And he kills every single one of them. The plot is the action. The plot is getting to see all of your favorite 80s action stars on the big screen together.
80s and 90s.
80s and 90s.
Call it what you want. It's genius. Because it's like a celebrity deathmatch type thing.
Correct. You know, just without the claymation.
It's fun.
Yeah, and they even self-reference the celebrities. In the last movie, this is a spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen the second one, Chuck Norris, they reference the Chuck Norris jokes in the movie.
That's great.
They ask him, you know, he comes out of the... He blows up a tank in an entire Russian army with one M4. And he walks out of the smoke and he goes, I heard you were dead. Yeah, I heard the same thing. Heard you got bit by a king cobra. And Chuck Norris goes, I did. 4 agonizing hours later, the snake finally died.
I mean...
So it's that kind of stuff is why we keep going back to the Expendables and why I think it's a lot of fun for them, too.
Absolutely. We are all incredibly excited for another installment of this very action-packed and ridiculous franchise starring incredibly aging action stars, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone. Is Bruce Willis not making a cameo in this one?
He won't be in this one.
Oh, but we replaced Bruce Willis with, of course, the legendary Harrison Ford.
So sorry to hear that.
No, that's phenomenal, honestly. So I'm really excited. This one's going to be in August.
August.
Wow, this is going to be an awesome summer for movies. We have Guardians of the Galaxy, Expendables 3, Amazing Spider-Man 2, X-Men Days of Future Past, just to name a few.
Yeah.
So
it's gonna be one eventful summer, to say the least.
Absolutely, and that's gonna have a lot of film reviews this summer. So look out for that. Look out for Expendables 3. And thanks again for listening to another installment of News Over Brews. I'm Al Manarino, and this podcast was sponsored by Vandalay Industries.
I'm Ryan DeMarco, and until you pin me, this podcast will go on.
I'm Lucas Jones. Half of the proceeds from tonight's podcast will be donated to the Human Fund. The Human Fund. It's money for people.
Hopefully you're all Seinfeld fans, and thanks for listening.